You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Today's date is August 15th, 2024. This is being recorded on the 14th. I think I'm constrained to talk about something that the media has been hyping in the West. The August 6th incursion of Kiev's forces into the borderland Kursk region, which has very little military significance. It's over. They're being slowly ejected. They can't maintain anything. We'll get to that here in a minute. But it's only because of the wild claims of the American media, especially on television, that I have to set this straight. At first, it seems shocking how this could happen, and then you actually get into the details, and it's another matter. The Ukrainian and mercenary forces have occupied 28 largely evacuated little villages on the right on the border area. Maximum they penetrated is about 4 to 5 miles. And this information comes from the regional governor, the acting regional governor, Alexei Smirnov. And he revealed this was a few days after that, so roughly around the 9th or the 10th. Reports already been made concerning the condition of the border region. There's no clear front line, meaning this was highly an irregular operation, which makes it really an irregular formation rather than a regular army. So trying to gauge their location is very difficult. It's not a major incursion, although depending on who you read, the Russian Emergencies Ministry and the National Anti-Terrorism Committee says really that only, as of right now, 12 civilians have been killed, including a few children. 121 have been injured. Since the fighting began, about 121,000 locals had either left voluntarily or have been removed. And at this time, today, by the 15th, another 180,000 have been evacuated. Now, since there's not much military significance here, this is meant to terrorize civilians, as a lot of what Ukraine does in Russian or Crimean territory. The evacuation process, as Smirnov says, was they attempted to unsuccessfully to stymie it. They fired at civilians and ambulances and other civilian vehicles. Remember, this is a 600-mile border. The incursion area itself is maybe 15 to 20 miles. Advances now, even if it was more successful, was impossible. Anti-tank ditches have been dug really the same distance. But there are sabotage organizations using Russian passports. Many of them have been arrested, as far as anyone knows. And patrols and things like this, really a police matter, have been increased. And of course, this has been Putin's position, that there isn't really a military purpose to this. It's a civilian area. Russia has the quick reaction to pull people out of there, civilians out of there. And if it continues, as of right now, negotiations are impossible. This is not the first time Ukraine has engaged in simply attacking civilian infrastructure. These are heavily fortified areas, but not the entire 600-mile border. There's low troop density up until now, of course, on both sides of this, just border guards rather than regulars. And on the Russian side, normal life had gone on. The town that gets talked about a lot is Sudja. This is a small, to the population of 4,000 or something like that, right over the border. Initially, it seemed just like a normal border clash, although it's a weird place for that to happen. But Ukrainian media, or Kiev's media, which is the American media, for about 2-3 days was very silent. Later, of course, the American media created all of these stories of this massive invasion. And we know that this is a terrorist activity because one of their targets was the Gurnal-Belogorsky Monastery of St. Nicholas in that very same city, founded in 1671. I don't know how that's significant, but it just shows, and these aren't, for the most part, these aren't Ukrainians, and we're going to get to that here in a minute. Kiev didn't admit this until the 8th, so 2 days later. The advisor to the Ukrainian president's office, Mikhail Podolyak, said that regulars had entered the Kursk region. But of course, Russian reinforcements were rushed to the area, and special forces were there to eliminate the irregular aspects of this. Ultimately, the whole thing has no real military significance. It's there to show Washington that they could still do things like this. By the 8th, it had been contained. Kiev didn't have the capacity to establish a continuous front. The town itself was not captured, or very briefly. And it's just, a tedious cleanup, mopping up operation. And there's going to be, and there has been, sporadic raids across the border, the Sumy regions on the other side. And this is something along the lines, a few authors have mentioned this, in the fall of 2022, in the Kharkov, back when Kiev, could field regulars, however, in a limited way. The point was to create I think this was said by RT, I could be wrong, to narrow the focus of the attack, to penetrate enemy territory using a lot of fast-moving light vehicles and forced a surprised defensive position to retreat. Now, they may have had this capacity briefly in the fall of 2022, really around the time this war should have been over, but now they certainly don't have it. Now, I don't know how they know this, but Forbes has issued a report on this. I think they're embedded, so it really doesn't matter. On a few other places, it seems that about 6,000 troops, both regular and irregular, are involved. I don't know how Forbes knows this, but they say the 88th Mechanized Brigade, the 80th Air Assault Brigade, despite not really having a functional air force, is involved in this. Somehow they claim that this is one of the most elite and agile groupings in the Ukrainian military, though, what they've been doing up until now, I don't know. How they know this, I also don't know. They're embedded journalists. Other reports, depending on who you read, say it's about 1,000, maybe 1,500, mostly or at least partially foreign soldiers, a few dozen armored vehicles, initially crossed. There was artillery fire from the Ukrainian side. Again, this is a long border. It's hard. You can't patrol every inch of it. That Sudja was heavily shelled. Again, it's only 6 miles away. Ukraine mustered whatever men it could and really struck a very poorly guarded part of the border. And Russia was taken off guard because of how absurd the whole thing was. They don't have the capacity to secure flanks, supply, or provide logistics, artillery support, drone operations, unless, of course, you have mostly foreign mercenaries with foreign money. Most of these brigades involved never penetrated. They're still in Sumy. And they occasionally, in really an irregular fashion, continue any kind of cross-border attacks. And we know this partially because the natural gas metering station, the only significant thing in Sudja, continues to operate. It's one of the places where natural gas goes from Russia via Ukraine and into Europe. You know, the funny thing is, funny in all senses of the term, and if you do a Google search on this, image search, it's really funny. You have all of these detailed maps. God knows where they're getting this information from. Various media, with arrows pointing in all various directions and shading in certain areas. And they don't really refer to anything. One commentator I saw on Twitter said over 2,000 square miles has been taken, with zero evidence for this claim. And how this goes, and this is how, fundamentally, how falsehood spreads. Because an absurdity like this, these breathless, hysterical media reports, are taken as fact, and then those facts are used to create new theories. And then those theories, based on falsehood, are then used to interpret whatever facts come after. That's how falsehood and propaganda really perpetuate itself. The theories sound very erudite, they sound very interesting and scholarly, but they're completely false. The other trope I see are these white-haired, very distinguished-looking men in front of these huge screens in the newsroom at a time where there was no information released on this. Everything was an invention. The graphics were excellent, despite the fact that they had zero information. And the whole thing is absurd. This is a relatively unknown, not an exceptionally significant district center, and this is where the so-called most combat-ready units of this military are sent. Now, of course, they don't know that, but it shows that this is just for propaganda use only. Everyone knows it's the Donbass, a Russian-speaking, very Russian area. It's already voted to become a part of Russia, where the Russian army is slowly, to minimize casualties, both civilian and their own, advancing without much resistance. This is where these brigades are needed, not in this silly, it's almost as if, or actually it is as if, Kiev is well aware of how the Western press is going to report on this, and hence they're guaranteed further support. This is not the Azov Sea operation, the so-called counteroffensive months ago, which ended in miserable failure. The most that the Ukrainians can do is retreat. They can plug gaps in their defenses, and even that's become impossible. Today, despite this blip on the radar, now regime's media, even the major ones, have been forced to deal with this permanent loss of territory and population, to accept defeat in one form or another. They don't use that word. But I want to stress that since this war has been artificially kept alive way beyond when it should have ended, money, material, even men, by this desperate NATO apparat, normal rules of analysis when you talk about wars really don't apply. If things were normal, this war would have been over in the fall of 22. There is no point in creating a war of attrition that the non-existent Ukrainian economy could never maintain. But because the fact that Kiev is a colony of the Western powers, by the way, they claim not to know anything about this, which is ridiculous, another one of these falsehoods that have been promoted, because this has been artificially dragged out, there's a new set of variables to use to analyze. And again, that doesn't seem to be well known. Probably the only success, genuine success, very early on in 2022 was the Kharkov operation. So they're trying to replicate this here, but they don't have the resources anymore. Throwing money at it, a lot of that money never gets to where it's supposed to go. Or vehicles, and now the F-16, which was overhyped at the time, now is very obsolete, implies well-schooled, trained, and experienced pilots, which of course don't exist. What is the point of even using them when they're going to be shot down? Especially when the media is trumpeting them, they know they're coming. Any breakthrough by light mobile units is impossible. For 3 years, though, much of this border area, the 600 miles, was fairly peaceful. The White House, aware of the situation, claimed to have opposed Ukrainian actions on Russian territory, which includes, of course, border areas. This is another reason that this was such a shock to Moscow. And people are talking about crossing red lines. Now, terrorist action on Russian territory has been going on for some time. But, of course, there is allegedly a change coming in the White House. I don't know if it's going to be a change of policy, but Kiev does see something to grab for. I've heard, but I can't verify, that the Kievan state is talking to people around Kamala Harris. And whether that means the fix is in or not, I'm not sure. But this is something along the lines of the Confederate invasion of the North, which stuttered and sputtered in Gettysburg, attempting to show that we can do this and therefore the British and French should support us. And it ended pretty much the same way. But even a small success, along with the media megaphone, would give Kiev not only the right to thump its chest, but even to demand more cash from the regime. The fact that this will do nothing but outrage Russian opinion, you know, joining the military is now almost faddish in Russia because of stuff like this. And the defenses are just going to be fortified. It's hard to prepare for the absurd. But is this gamble worth what's left of the combat-ready brigades? I mean, after all, they would be lost elsewhere anyway. Yeah, they're not going to regain much. Crimea is gone forever. And they just want to destroy it anyway. And apparently they don't know very much about Putin, because there's a claim that this is meant to stir discontent within Russia, and Putin is somehow incompetent. Apparently they don't know anything about the guy. They're starting to believe their own propaganda. But the worst thing, this attrition war, from an economy that was third and fourth world long before this war began, this explains the artificiality of the whole thing. To the point being, is to slowly wear down Russia using whatever resources they can, no matter how many Ukrainians are killed. Ukraine's recruitment challenges have doomed it long ago. A year and a half, maybe, they ran out of willing soldiers. Now they're grabbing people wherever they physically, just grabbing people off the street. This is a desperate attempt to disrupt Russia's unstoppable advance. They don't want to focus, the Russians don't want to focus too heavy on it, but it can't be ignored. You can't legitimize what was previously considered unacceptable. This is going to force the Russian brass to rethink the nature of their security and surveillance. Again, anticipating the absurd is very difficult. So, the regime wants to claim that there are several fresh, well-trained, equipped brigades, either of foreigners or of Ukrainians being trained elsewhere, and any day now are going to be sent into the war. And they've been saying this for a very long time. Now, the strategy seems to be to use these non-existent units to force Russia to scale back or at least slow down significantly its operations in eastern Ukraine or the Donbas, relocating experienced units from there. But that's an impossibility. There is no evidence that any of these forces exist. The Pentagon seems to suggest that these three battered brigades that have now been largely neutralized in this raid are all of the combat-ready reserves, or what they call combat-ready reserves. I don't think they've had reserves in a very long time. It doesn't matter anyway, since Russia still holds all of the cards. And another attempt, of course, is absolutely out of the question. Russian strategy can continue if the goal is to clear the border area of sabotage units, this is just terror units, and prevent breakthroughs elsewhere on the border. That will then make the border an active combat zone, but the Russians are aware that the resources simply aren't there. Now, if you remember back in February, Zelensky fired Zaluzhny as the supreme commander of the Ukrainian forces, and that came from the Pentagon like everything else. Delusioni was hesitant. He didn't want to commit more cannon fodder. He had a personal connection to his men, as any good general should have, especially when it came to this silly, this hyped counteroffensive. I love people using that phrase like they know what it is. That never really occurred. This is sort of a substitute for it. Russia's forces are professional. Ukraine is not only conscript, but some of the dregs of the population, guys in their 40s and 50s. Yeah, they paint a rosy picture domestically, but in foreign capitals, they know better. So what happened on August 6th? A few thousand so-called reserves and a lot of mercenaries entered just a short distance within over the border. These are morale boosting strategies. They're meant to create the impression that these conscripts can fight wars. But even the Ukrainian government knows otherwise. I say Ukrainian government loosely, because so much of this aid money, especially when it's liquid money, actual cash, we know they're spending money on villas in southern France, spending a ton of money in Monte Carlo. They don't think that this is going to last for much longer. And that's the nature of the difference between Zelensky and Zelensky. Of course, Zelensky has never been in the military, knows nothing about military doctrine. The guy was an actor and a bad one. Zelensky said that the war had reached its terminus. And he said this in The Economist last November. Now, who did they replace him with? I mentioned him before, Alexander Sersky. And he was chosen because of his closeness to NATO personally, but he's known for pursuing reckless tactics. In Bakhmut, a lot of unnecessary, I mean, the whole thing is unnecessary casualties, but he simply didn't care. And his nickname is General 200. I think I've mentioned this in the past. That refers to Cargo 200, which is an old Soviet code denoting lots of military fatalities, not just casualties. And as most people are saying now, he'll stay where he is so long as he does what he's told. He doesn't seem to have the personal connection with his men that Zelensky had. Doing what he's told really is a matter of obeying the Pentagon and the U.S. Embassy, but Zelensky doing the same thing. And he could be replaced at any moment. I've said it before, and it has stayed the same, that the Pentagon has absolute control over this proxy war from Kiev's side. Any leader or general or even foot soldier is just a pawn, very expendable. And since certainly the Pentagon has no personal connection to any of these people, they really don't care what happens. I've said before that as far as the Jews are concerned, the Khazars are concerned, they hate both sides. From their history with the Cossacks in Ukraine, as well as Russia, the Third Rome, they don't care who dies there. They win either way. It's not merely that Russia has outplayed the U.S. in every area, but their military technology tends to be superior. The cutting-edge delivery mechanisms for nuclear and non-nuclear payloads, they've pioneered the hypersonic missile. So the old missile defense systems are obsolete. And we can talk, I've mentioned this before, the Dagger or Kinzhal, the 1,500-mile air-launch ballistic missile. That's usually loaded on a fighter. The MiG-31 reaches Mach 10, or the Zircon, which has come from a ship, also hypersonic. Mach 9, it can attack any kind of target, either ground or naval, anywhere within 750 miles. The Iskander is far more famous. Mach 7.6, I think, is its maximum. And of course, the Sarmat, the Limitless. We're talking about a video game here. 14,000 miles. And it's capable of carrying a maximum of 16 thermonuclear, multiple independently targetable reentry vehicle warheads. So the U.S. has to tread very carefully. Now, the F-16 is another matter. For about the last year, the American press has been told to talk about this like it's a big deal. You notice when even this incursion, the vehicles, the weapons, they come from all over the place. Nothing is standardized, which is why I maintain, including the language, because they're speaking all kinds of languages in this. But the F-16, and people don't really think too deeply about that. Not only is it obsolete, but they don't have the pilots, and certainly no one that can pilot an F-16 that could go against the Sukhoi fighter, let alone the S-400 air defense system. There's no pilots, and fuel's at an all-time low. This is the other thing that was wasted in this stupid incursion. There's been, as far as I've heard, over a dozen F-16 crashes just in Pakistan, because they use this to a great extent. It's like another Boeing 737 MAX. And this is why the Pakistani Air Force is going to China, getting the JF-17s. The F-16 is considered junk, at least the ones that they send for export. Today, as far as nuclear weapons go, Pentagon has already confessed to 30 what they call broken arrows. 30 broken arrows. These are serious nuclear weapons accidents. Many of them did not explode, obviously, but lots of them have been erroneously either dropped or sent into populated areas. Now, I want to quote someone who I don't think I've quoted before. He's a decent guy. I think he's Pakistani, but don't quote me on that. Nauman Sadiq. And he says this, and this is some of the things that I'm talking about here. He's not a bad guy. But he says, NATO's central rationale in engaging Russia in a protracted proxy war in Ukraine since the Maidan coup of 2014 is to sufficiently degrade Russia's conventional warfare capabilities in order to coerce the Kremlin to give up its formidable nuclear arsenal in return for economic inducements, as the Atlantic Alliance did to several Eastern European client states following the dissolution of the USSR in the 90s by incorporating them into the European Union. Now, I don't know where this came from. I don't know where he got it. I don't know if other people are talking about it. But this has never been mentioned in any strategic doctrine. It's never been mentioned in public. This has nothing to do with nuclear weapons. That's simply taken as a given. It is true that it's meant to chip away, to degrade Russia's conventional warfare capabilities. As of now, maybe 5% of the Russian GDP is being sent here. A small percentage of the Russian military is being sent in this war. And I don't know what economic inducements he's talking about, but it's not to give up nuclear weapons. No, the reason for this war is to eliminate the leader of the nationalist and Eurasian resistance to globalization, and of course today the Great Reset. Russia stands in the way of the total corporate domination of the universe, not to mention a standing refutation of the policies of the regime, because both Russia and China are highly successful economies, in the Russian case coming from very little. The regime wants access to this huge market, a very well-educated population, and the tremendous resources. Therefore, the regime needs both Russia and China compliant, poor, and weak. Now, the regime says we had no idea. Remember, the EU says that this is fine. The blowhard scumbag Lindsey Graham says that this incursion is bold and beautiful. He even went so far in his mealy-mouthed kind of way to say that he wants retired NATO pilots to enlist in the Ukrainian Air Force and fly these F-16. And he is more than aware that any cross-border action from Ukraine has attacked civilian infrastructure and resources. Retired NATO pilots in the Ukrainian Air Force, I think the language may be a problem. And I also think things have changed since these, I don't know how old he wants to go, pilots retired. Already, I mean, Kiev has fully admitted. Now, apparently, there's a few Ukrainian soldiers who have spoken to the regime outlets. They all admit massive casualties in this excursion. They're claiming, men on the ground are claiming that the point was to capture some territory that could be traded away for possible talks with Moscow, and the more obvious one, to relieve pressure on Donbass. Now, how they're going to hold anything, that has not been explained to anyone. Putin makes a lot of sense. He's saying the Russian forces have long since neutralized this, pushing them out, although, again, because it's an irregular, it's not a regular force that can be predicted. It's an irregular, independent units rather than a single force. Military enlistments, as I've already said, are up in Russia, and that makes a lot of sense. It's not meant to make Putin look bad, or they may have thought that. It makes him look very good. There is no way. NATO itself has said this, although through a unnamed Western official in Bloomberg publication, saying that there's no way they can hold this for very long. August 6th, a handful of tiny, evacuated, empty border villages is not going to change a whole lot. But at least Russian Defense Ministry says, you know, within 2 days, the advance was halted and 200 armored vehicles destroyed, which, you know, is high, but it's not beyond the norm. This unnamed NATO official, who could be anybody or nobody, that was cited by Bloomberg, I think, last week. The incursion was, quote, at least crucial to show that Kiev can challenge the Kremlin. Well, any terror attack coming from any place can, quote, challenge the Kremlin. He also said a cross-border attack had been discussed for some time, for what it's worth, and Kiev has always been searching for possibilities for something to put Russia on the defensive. And even this didn't work. The EU has supported this, therefore this red line has long since been crossed. Other NATO members have nothing to say, not the least of which because the pro-Russian media have been banned. I also want to note, as I do almost every time, that this would have been unthinkable in the Soviet era. Something like this would have been out of the question in terms of policy. Yet another unnamed Western intelligence official says that NATO allies don't harbor reservation on the incursion, though consider it unlikely that Ukrainian forces will be able to hold Russian territory, even if it takes weeks for Moscow to force them out of Kursk. Also to be found in Bloomberg. So this old red line has been crossed, although again I'm not shocked by this, since the Deputy Pentagon Press Secretary Sabrina Singh, that's the American, Pentagon, says that this attack all of a sudden is consistent with Washington's policy on self-defense, since this is just a self-defense measure. The Financial Times has repeated a lot of this. Yes, they caught the Russians by surprise. And the Russians have responded with drones and FAB glide bombs. That's the FAB in Russian refers to the, is an acronym for explosive aerial bomb. And the point of the FAB glide bomb is to, of course, it's something by definition dropped from a plane of some type. And it has flight control. It has surfaces that are loaded up on it. Even a normal bomb you could put it on, to create a flight path. That means it can be released at a certain distance from a target rather than being right over it to be dropped. So the aircraft isn't necessarily exposed to any anti-aircraft fire. But Ukrainians have no anti-aircraft anyway. So they operate like almost like guided missiles at a minuscule fraction of the cost. They're only in flight for a short time. They really can't be intercepted. And this is what's being used to push them back. And the Financial Times, again, how they know, I don't know, admitted too that the Ukrainian military stripped absolutely critical and necessary troops in Donbas, Kharkov and the Donetsk front. Since these cities were, first of all, very small, I shouldn't say cities, these border towns are tiny, and they've been evacuated, they won absolutely nothing. Just on Sunday, this force lost 70 armored vehicles, which I think is a record. The farthest they went was 5 miles in occupying 28 settlements. Of course, the UN has said absolutely nothing about this. And to a great extent, other than these hysterical media reports, the Western audience has no clue what's going on. As of right now, I think I said this already, but as of right now, the gas metering station in Suzhou, which is the only possible. There's a nuclear power station, but you don't have to. You don't have to have a ground attack to disrupt any of this. For the gas, that could be done from the Ukrainian side, because that's where the pipeline passes through. Fuel continues to flow, so business comes first. Now, the claim is the Western leadership didn't expect it. Allegedly, Kiev didn't consult them or ask permission. That's a dangerous game. If that's true, I don't think it is. Erasing this red line is a problem. Now, the red line is that to avoid escalation, let alone a direct conflict, Ukraine could fight back but not attack. They can't attack Russian soil. Although that had been done before anyway. That's how they were going to manage it. Now, as far as the proof that these are mostly, or at least a significant part of them, are foreign, there's a POW speaking through the FSB, the Federal Security Service, 26-year-old member of the 80th Air Assault Brigade, Ruslan Potoratsky. That's what the name he gave himself anyway. He said he heard foreign radio chatter when crossing the border, and he thought it was some kind of interference. He said they spoke English, Polish, maybe French. I didn't understand them. Called on the radio to repeat what they said, only heard gibberish in response, gibberish to him. They were local communications, proving that they're from all over the world. He also admitted, and this is a former soldier who crossed the border, a member of this incursion, that there's an entire brigade made up of former prisoners, people who used to be in jail. Like the movie The Dirty Dozen, units have been composed of convicts who volunteered in exchange for early release. Now, foreign fighters have been used since the very beginning of this, but now I'm willing to argue that a majority of their force, especially something like this, is foreign. The International Legion. There's also the Georgian Legion. Last I checked, it was mostly Georgian and Baltic peoples who were part of this International Legion, and they're very, very difficult to control. And I haven't even gotten to the chemical weapon. The power company workers in Kursk, not the city, but the region, something else that Governor Smirnov mentioned last week, that the team working for a Rosetti power company in the Belovsky district came under fire, and the shells contained banned chemical weapons. They survived the attacks, but several police officers, and actually the head of the village council himself, was poisoned. The missile attacks in the area have grown, and, you know, these tiny residential, 28 residential areas, and just over the border, Smirnov says there's about 2,000 people who have not been accounted for, civilians. So there has been a full investigation that this was indeed a chemical weapons attack, which, again, it's been used before. It was used by Chechens. It's used by Israel. Why not used here? Made in America, which is, you know, Captain Obvious, of course. Smirnov reported that a repair crew had come under fire from Ukrainian forces that had poisoning typical of this. I've mentioned General Igor Kirillov, who was head of the Chemical and Biological Defense Forces, who says, as of right now, clearly these are chemical weapons. Hexachloroethane and zinc oxide. As of now, there's other things. He also said that there's been 400 incidents since the war started where chemical weapons were used by Kiev's forces. Some not all that lethal, something just slightly above tear gas, but then there's other more serious toxins being used. The nuclear power station, as of now, Kurchatov, about 30 miles from the city itself. If this was a target, it hasn't been shut down yet. And this is one of the things they wanted to take, they did not, that were going to be used as bargaining chips. But these kind of terrorist actions, they're not surprising anymore. There's even a State Department guy who said that the attack was a sovereign matter of Ukraine, with a straight face and everything. The U.S. maintains contacts. You know, even Biden tried to say something about this unsuccessfully. about this operation. It's going to take a lot for me to believe that the U.S. didn't know about this, especially given the fact that there is a nuclear power plant involved. So anyway, just the actions of the regime here, their Ukrainian puppet, this can lead to something far more serious. We've been talking about this for a long time. I haven't joined these hysterical claims. Far worse than that is this destruction and depopulation of Ukraine. Since this forced mobilization, the PTSD, the trauma that this entire population is now engaged with, especially when you're talking about these hysterical nuclear reports, now two power stations, Zaporozhye and now this one. But thank God they've been completely unsuccessful in all of these areas. So whatever variables you want to use, whatever you want to stress, whatever cause or reason may have been behind this, no one knows for sure right now. And I just assume the media is not telling the truth about it. It's all bad. However, it's all been very unsuccessful. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.